My name is Mike Matuzzi. I am the host of Contemporary Spirituality, and I'm here this morning with Michael Poffenberger. Michael is the executive director of the CAC, the Center for Action and Contemplation. He has held that position since 2014. And Michael, welcome.
Thanks, Matt. Good to be here.
Thanks for joining us. Tell our listeners a little bit about your story, if you will, and what was it about your background and past that got you to accept the offer to join the CAC in 2014?
Yeah, absolutely. First, I just want to say thanks for this chance to talk with you and your community. I've been a longtime follower and fan of the convenings and recordings that y'all put out from Kansas. I feel like we're in this moment where new ways of thinking and being and practicing our spiritual lives are bubbling up all over the place. And it seems like what you have going is one of those examples of a place where something special is bubbling up. So thank you for what you're doing and for all the folks who have been a part of that. Just wanted to start with that.
Well, thank you so much for the kind words.
My intersection with the CAC really started way back in 2009. I was living and working in Washington, D.C. My job was focused professionally on preventing atrocity violence in Central Africa. There was a rebel group that had been abducting kids and turning them into child soldiers and committing these attacks on really vulnerable communities in a few different countries. And I'd helped start this organization with a few colleagues trying to generate international attention and awareness and action to help protect these communities and support them through this time of conflict. And in a lot of ways, that work was my faith. And I don't say that lightly. I had grown up Catholic. I'd gone to college at Notre Dame and had both the great gift of being exposed to the contemplative tradition and the social justice traditions of the church. You know, Dorothy Day, I spent summers at the Catholic Worker and spent a spring break once at Gethsemane Monastery where Merton was. So it wasn't that I hadn't been exposed to that, but I found it so hard to find that where I was in D.C. as a young professional and figure out how I could connect back into that stream that had informed me so much coming through college. And so in a lot of ways, I kind of tuned out that part of my brain and did the one thing that I did feel sure of, which was, you know, anything that I could do to help stop violence against these vulnerable communities, I should do. But as, you know, when in the context of our work at CAC, we always talk about people come to the contemplative tradition, not when things are going well, but when things aren't working, right? Something about their faith or their personal life starts to fall apart and they go searching for something deeper than just the formulaic version of our religious traditions. And that was certainly true for me. So I hit this period of burnout. I realized that I was becoming cynical, that I was really struggling with the reality that I couldn't, despite how hard I could work and however smart our strategies were for influencing policy, that I couldn't single-handedly make this situation better, at least not in the ways we wanted to, and really hit this period of burnout. And a mentor of mine introduced me to Richard Rohr and suggested I attend this wilderness-based Rites of Passage, which at the time was still a program of CAC, is these men's retreats. And it was just a really powerful experience for me where, you know, this idea of spirituality is not what we do when we do it right and gain God's favor, but in fact, how God meets us when we're doing it wrong and when we're in our low moments. And even the introduction to centering prayer, at those retreats, they always start each day out in the wilderness with a 20-minute sit. And it was so powerful that after I came back, I started a centering prayer group amongst a few of my friends in Washington, D.C., and that really became my spiritual home. So that was 2009, fast forward 5 years, I was on the board of the CAC at that point, and there was a leadership transition. And they invited me to come out and just help out. I was transitioning out of my role in DC, and I was supposed to be here for 3 months just to help the board set up a search process. And then at the end of that 3 months, after I produced a bunch of assessments and recommendations, the board chair asked if I'd be interested in sticking around. So, you know, my 3 months turned into about 7 years now, and here we are.
Excellent. Excellent. All right. Well, tell us about the CAC in 2014 when you started. So I didn't realize you had kind of a five-year history of sorts before that and had been working with the board, but you were now, I assume, in 2014 then full-time, and as the executive director, you're pretty much the head person there and working closely with Richard. What was your job? You know, how would you summarize your task or as you understood it in 2014?
Yeah. Forgive me if I'm just going to be super transparent about all of this. I don't know how many folks are aware of organizational lives, but even as shocking as it may sound, an organization like the CAC, we have our own challenges and bumps and bruises along the way.
Sure.
When I came in 2014, the big question, of course, was around the future of the CAC beyond Father Richard, our founder. You know, we had started all of these programs over the course of CAC's history. I think there's a challenge of having somebody with the breadth and depth of a gift like Richard's is that, you know, the way that I say it, I call it the Richard subsidy, which is the organization never really had to grow into its own maturity because no matter what we did, so long as Richard was there to anchor it, not only did people want to come, but it was always a very powerful and transformative experience for folks. The shadow side of that, though, was that it enabled us to be in this position where we did a whole lot of things, but there wasn't this level of clarity about what does success look like for us? What really is Richard's vision for this organization, not just his own teaching? How do we begin to take that seriously and really know what's ours to do and build around that? Because what happens when that's not clear, you know, there's a lot of projects and initiatives and ideas that stop and start at different points in history, but you're not really building something that can last or that can keep getting better at what it's doing in service to that one task. What is really ours to do as an organization? And when I reflected that back to the board, you know, it's obvious, but sometimes, you know, it's easier for people to not have to have those hard conversations. And so when I reflected that back to the board in that period of time as a consultant, you know, when they offered me the job, it was, can you help us facilitate this process of discernment around really getting clear on what is ours to do? Is there a future for CAC even beyond Richard? Because there's no, you know, Richard himself teaches that the Paschal mystery, right? Life, death, and resurrection is the cycle of all of history. CAC is not in any way needing to be immune to that. So one option is always this dignified death where we welcome that we served a purpose with Richard and then wouldn't have to anymore. That was something we wanted to take seriously. But pretty much from day one, my job was to figure out what's that through thread throughout CAC's history. What was Richard really trying to do with this institution and with his lifetime's body of work? And how do we clarify that in a way that we can really discern, is there a mission there for us to continue serving with integrity in the long term? So it was quite the process. There's literally in CAC's history, there was only one document that Richard had ever written saying what his hope was for the institution, because he's, for anyone who knows Richard, he's a savant, you know, in terms of his spiritual genius. That's my words, not his. I don't think he would ever describe himself that way. But he has this just intuitive grasp of the spiritual life. For whatever reason, God has given him such an amazing set of gifts in that way and as a communicator of that. But his brain doesn't work strategically. He doesn't think, how do I build an organization? You know, whenever I would ask him, Richard, what's your hope for the CAC? You know, I always joke, like, by the second sentence, he's talking about the cosmic Christ or the second half of life. You know what I mean? And it's not. And he goes right back into teaching mode. And so it was this really long conversation with him where we invited Richard, but we also invited members of our community, particularly, you know, at that time, the Living School was this brand new entity. Mike, what year were you sent from the school?
2017.
2017. Okay. So this is right while you were in the school is when we were going through a lot of these conversations.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And working with our other faculty as well to really discern what's the through thread throughout CAC's history. When Richard founded the CAC back in 1987, he was coming out of an intentional community. And that one document that he wrote at the time, he called CAC, his idea for it was what he called the school for a school for profits. And that's, of course, P-R-O-P-H-E-T-S, not monetary profits, if I have to clarify that. And it was this idea of how do you be a training ground for people who could be about the work of love in the world in these deep and impactful ways, but from this ground of contemplative awareness where our actions are motivated by a habituation to feeling God's presence in our life flowing through us, so that our actions are motivated not by attachment to success or status or being right or being better than anybody else, which even when we're doing things that are otherwise good can sometimes be the source of our motivations. But so that our actions can flow from this place of deeper love, which itself has transformative effect in the world. And, you know, Richard was convicted about this from his experience at New Jerusalem, where he was previous to CAC's intentional community in Cincinnati, where lots of really well-intentioned young people getting together to do good things, but lacking some of that, the kind of inner architecture that is required to really sustain that kind of work over the long haul. And he discerned this about the CAC. He went to a Merton's Hermitage for 40 days in 1986, and that's where, in his journal, he really had this vision of starting the school for profits. So we went back to those founding documents and then looked throughout CAC's history, and we were able to come to a few key conclusions. One of our other faculty members, Jim Finley, we interviewed him during this process, and he gave us this wonderful quote that now is kind of our shorthand for this undertaking. He said, you know, for 30 some years, CAC has been about Richard, but Richard's not about Richard. So the question now is, how can the CAC be about what Richard's about? And that's really what this discernment process was. So a few things came out of that. Is it okay if I share just kind of the evolving clarity of that?
Yeah, please.
Summarizing Richard's breadth and depth of work. You know, so first we did this survey of all these different books and all the different projects that he had sustained, but it's hard. You could you could make about 20 different organizations out of Richard's body of work. But there were a few things that we saw that were the continuous, what he was in integrity to throughout his entire teaching career. So one was this idea of being part of this renewal of the contemplative traditions of Christianity. In every project that Richard was doing, He had this historical analysis that the way that our church and our tradition evolved has stifled, in some respects, the true spiritual jewels, the true wisdom of our tradition. You know, where the path of Christian spirituality is not just about worshiping Jesus or our devotion to Jesus. It's about being on a path of inner realization of the Christ consciousness. Cynthia, one of our other faculty members, uses that term, the Christ consciousness ourselves. And that is a very different Christianity than what most of us grew up with, right? And
yes.
Richard credits Merton in a lot of ways for being kind of the modern in the West, the modern pioneer, if you will, of recognizing that Christianity has lost the contemplative jewels of the tradition in the West, and seeing this as a moment that is ripe for the renewal of that stream of Christian wisdom. So everything that he was doing was about helping make that wisdom more accessible and envisioning a Christianity that was less about who's right and who's wrong, you know, who's part of the right club or not the right club, or even, you know, are we behaving in the ways that we think good and moral people are supposed to behave? And actually a Christianity that's much more about a transforming community that is on this path where we are constantly growing through God's love and the habituation to God's love in service to the transformation of our world, and the interconnection of those things. So there's this broader tradition, Richard's unpacking it. How do we keep being a part of that modern recovery? And he sees that as something that, you know, when we look around at our world today, with everything that's happening, climate change and, you know, political uprisings, reckoning over racial injustices in our country, the polarization in our politics. You know, for Richard, this is a moment that yes, we need political solutions, but we need a new consciousness. We need a consciousness that allows us to be together in right relationship as humans, and that's what the contemplative tradition has to offer us. Because just the external solutions won't cut it on their own, so to speak. The second thing we realized was that Richard has always been, you know, his great gift, he's never the singular teacher, he's always the great collaborator. Throughout our history, one of the things we hear from our community that Richard has done so well is introduce them to so many other teachers, right? He's this kind of gateway. Some people call him a gateway drug, if that metaphor works for you, into the contemplative stream. You know, so through Richard, they'll discover, you know, our other faculty, Jim or Cynthia or Brian McLaren or Barbara Holmes, or they'll discover Ilya Delio. I know you all have worked a good bit with Ilya. You know, or these other voices who are really on the forefront of envisioning this new kind of Christianity that we see bubbling up all around us. And so how do we envision a CAC that can hold Richard's charism for being that gateway in partnership with multiple other teachers? And so we really learned from the Living School in this, that the beautiful things, I mean, you could speak to this, Mike. I would love to hear your own reflections on what happens when it's not just one teacher, and it's not even just three individual teachers, but it's what arises from this whole faculty of teachers who have a lifetime of work in service to this tradition, but are also learning from each other and evolving in real time.
Yeah.
And so that was really the second big realization, is we need to be platforming. There is a role for the wisdom teacher. There's a danger in the platforming of the guru model, so to speak, that, you know, that comes with its own risks as well. But for us, we want to navigate that with care and recognize that there's also a role for that prophetic gift that these teachers offer the world from that place of great depth. And how can we continue to do that? Does that resonate from your experience?
Yeah, I absolutely. In fact, to bring it very modern, I was listening to a podcast, I think, with Rabbi Rami. He was interviewing Brian McLaren, and Brian, I think it kind of touches on your synergy piece, talked about the Living School students and, you know, the different voices that the faculty brings, and depending on what tradition you come from, one voice may just speak with greater clarity, but the collaboration and the voices together, I understand what you're saying, and I think it's right on.
Oh, amazing. Yeah. We talk about these wisdom teachers. It's different than a higher education model, you know. We were looking some at how do universities structure their faculties. But, you know, the difference is, in my experience at least, higher education models tend to be places that are run on the engine of ego and academic success and who's publishing more and all these things. But when you have folks who are certainly, I mean, none of our faculty lack academic grounding and credentialing.
Right.
But what happens when they're at a stage in life and they've done their work on their own path to the point where that's no longer something that they're very concerned with or interested in any way. And in fact, you know, if anything, they're quite allergic to it. You know, that's when you know you have the gift of a real wisdom teacher, because beauty can arise in that collaboration in a way that we don't see happening elsewhere as much.
Yes.
So first was, we're about these broader contemplative renewal of Christianity. Second was, how do we be grounded in a faculty? At that point, we got a little bit stuck. I'm just going to be honest. Okay. Because when we look out at the landscape, right? So suddenly we're recognizing, and this has been CAC's challenge from the beginning, right? That Richard's vision is just so damn big, that we want to be about this rebirth of a new Christianity. That's, you know, just this little modest undertaking we think is happening at a moment in which many of our religious traditions and spiritual traditions, you know, the institutions that have served them are in various forms of crisis. And we want to do it with a faculty of teachers. But we look out around us and we think, holy cow, where do we start, right? Like, how do you narrow that down even further to something that's manageable for one organization? How do we hold the big vision that all that that would entail, and also just get super clear on the specific pieces of that in partnership with these teachers that we want to try to take responsibility for? That was quite a challenge. And I think, you know, for many spiritual organizations, that's the challenge, because spiritual visions are big visions. You know, they're visions about the evolution of history and consciousness and a renewal of our religious traditions and transformation of our social structures and, you know, all the things that are required to support people's inner journeys of transformation. So I think that is often a challenge. We've heard from Ilya too, just when she's getting going, she has such a big message too, and trying to harness that in a way that's concrete can be so hard. So we also, you know, recognize that the landscape that we're in, you know, when you do a traditional kind of corporate strategic planning process, you do this what's called a market analysis. And, you know, the idea is to look out and see how do we position ourselves in a way that creates a competitive advantage, right? Well, for us, it's more how do we do this in a way, what's our cooperative advantage? If we recognize that we're part of this bigger body of Christ in this contemplative movement, what are the unique gifts that we would have to offer that? Because the needs right now are so intense. You know, just to be frank about that, the pipelines that formed our current generation of teachers are, for the most part, not serving that function anymore. You know, Richard and Thomas Keating and Cynthia come from formation experiences, for one, that they were the exception to their own formations, and in many respects, they were kind of renegades, you know, of the Franciscans and the Benedictines, and for Ilya, for her Franciscan sisters, they were the pioneers. But they also credit, you know, the Benedictines and the Franciscans, and for Jim, the you know, the Trappists, with forming who they became. But those communities are not attracting the kinds of creative energy and life force that they did for previous generations. So there's this big question of how do we envision new structures that can give rise to a next generation of teachers and leaders for this contemplative renewal? That was one of the questions we faced. We faced questions around action and contemplation, where we're forming people, but we're forming people for action. And this is one of the critiques that people give of us the most. Like, where's the action? You know, like, why isn't CAC out there on the forefront of things? And certainly that's a part of our vision, and it's what we validate, and it's partly what we want to equip our community for. But that hasn't been a strong suit for us. So what do we do with that? You know, that was another question during this time when the needs in our world are so great for people working from places of compassion and love and self-surrender to meet those needs. A third question that we had was around how does this get local? You know, that's probably the most common thing that comes up for us in our community, especially for, you know, sendees of the Living School. I don't know if this was one for you. You seem to have been one of the ones that just created something on your own, which is partly what I'm so impressed by. But But what happens is people have these experiences where they suddenly, like, something opens in their heart. You know, for me, the first time I heard Richard and Cynthia and Jim teach, you know, I didn't realize what a cynic I had become until suddenly something spoke to me in such a way that just absolutely broke me open and felt so real and hopeful. You know, but the challenge is then you go back into your own local parish or community, and it's really hard to you know, put the blinders back on after that's happened. And what we see is people then come to CAC and how can you meet my needs locally? How can you help me form a group? What church can I get that would enable me to feel that sense of what I felt that was truly hopeful, truly real, truly transformative, you know, during that one moment, whatever I connected with, you know, at a conference or in a course or in the living school. So how do we support people's needs for localized community? Because the reality is, you know, coming to a conference once a year, whatever the engagement is with CAC, that's not it, right? And we want to be clear about that, that that's not going to be what sustains people and really leads to the vision being realized of transformed people in a transformed world. So those are some of the challenges that we face in thinking about, you know, within all that, what are we best equipped to actually do? So where we landed was what we call this idea being a gateway, a front door to a movement of contemplative renewal. Richard's great gift as a vernacular theologian, as Ilya calls him, he's a popularizer of this wisdom. He has 100 front doors into this path, and people meet them in all sorts of different ways, you know, whether it's 12 steps or men's spirituality or the Enneagram or, you know, first and second half of life, true self and false self, scripture, you know, you name it. And Richard's written a book about it. I joke with him, you know, the nature of all of reality, you know, like that's all encompassing because the universal Christ was really, it's everything, you know, like, so he puts all these front doors. He's, you know, throwing those breadcrumbs for people. And then he's pointing the finger to the deeper path. So that's really what we have discerned kind of as our role. How do we be popularizers? How do we be a gateway for people who are experiencing the ways that our broader landscape is in a time of disruption and rebirth on all sorts of level, but especially in our religious traditions? And CAC can be this entry point into the many different ways something new is being born at this time. And we can do that in partnership with these wisdom teachers who are holding various aspects of the contemplative traditions of Christianity and in service to this broader contemplative renewal that's happening in our tradition.
Excellent. So I think I get
there.
It.
That was a lot.
That's a lot, but I mean, I think I follow it exactly what you're saying. The gateway, and I think the last question you posed in this kind of discernment process is, how do we be the gateway? And I assume then from there, that's a 5-year plan, Michael, or is that a new array of programs, or how has that question been answered? I assume it's that question will continue to be asked, but as it's come up and you folks have decided that's the question, what has the response been, I guess, would be a better way to put it.
Great question. So we documented the foundations of what, so when we say gateway, what are the borders of our gateway, right? Or what's the unique nature of this particular gateway, I should say. So we documented Richard's 7 themes of the alternative orthodoxy. That's something folks may be familiar with because we've covered them through our Conspire conference series, and they're part of the foundation for the Living School. We developed in conversation with Richard and our faculty what we call our contemplative pedagogy, which is, you know, really how do we understand the process of spiritual growth and change that people go through from being identified with the false self, the kind of egoic construct, to discovering their true self in God. That was a big undertaking that we took to kind of lay the foundations of kind of systematizing how Richard understands that process and has helped people guide people through it. And then we mapped out kind of our movement ecology. And so the five-year plan is really partner with teachers who can hold various aspects of the theological ground and the contemplative teaching and even the social engagement. So we'll be doing a lot more, I think, in providing role models and opportunities for folks to engage outside the CAC and eventually even mobilizing them directly into opportunities to take action outside the CAC through partner organizations. And then linking up with others who are holding other key roles. So there's new kind of neo-monastic communities being born. There's new models of small group formation. You know, we have Centering Prayer and our wonderful friends at Contemplative Outreach who've brought that forward. I think there's going to be other models where people can have access to localized practice. So how do we be introducing our community to those things? And then doing that across a whole spectrum of different kinds of programs and mediums of engagement. So our daily meditations were, I think we'll continue to do the daily meditations for a long time to come. You know, Richard is giving us so much that we can continue to use over the long term. I think eventually we will start to see more voices being integrated into those. I may be jumping the gun here, but I'll say that our daily meditations team is about to introduce themselves to our community. Like, it's many people think Richard's up till midnight writing those himself and hitting send, you know, but in reality, there's already a big team who's helping him do a lot of that. And we're going to introduce them to folks so that people become aware that this has never been just Richard, right? This is a much bigger thing. We have online courses. We're going to release a couple new online courses. We see that as a huge opportunity. So for people anywhere in the world, you know, I'm sure there's some of your people there in Kansas who it can feel very isolating when you start to go on this journey and, you know, your friends and family or the folks in your parish or church community don't understand what you're saying, you know? Our online courses have been these learning journeys where people connect with others who are asking those same questions and learn through the power of digital technology and good content, but also good community where you can find that. We call that pop-up communities, pop-up learning communities. Podcast is another area of growth for us. We, you know, when Richard got started, before he even started CAC, when he was at New Jerusalem Community in Cincinnati, they started calling him the tape priest because these nuns would record him, and then Franciscan Media, or then St. Anthony Press, would send them all over the world, and he became known as the tape priest. But these days, we say he'd be called the podcast priest in reality, because our first podcast, we started with him. Unpacking the Universal Christ book. And it was so successful, we've built those partnerships now. So Brian McLaren has a podcast called Learning How to See. We're doing a podcast with Jackie Lewis, who's we've been really grateful to have increasing partnership with. Barbara Holmes, who's really uncovering the mystical traditions in the Black church experience. Mm. We have a podcast with her coming out later this year called The Cosmic We. And it's using cosmology and narrative to reimagine how we understand ourselves as human beings. Jim Finley, we have one called Turning to the Mystic. So each season, Jim has spent a lifetime, he jokes, with six companions on his spiritual journey and six different mystics that he has read and reread and let soak into his very bones. And so each season, he's unpacking a different one of those mystics and how they've impacted his life and sharing that gift. So last year, we had more podcast listeners than we did daily meditation subscribers, actually. 4 million downloads in our podcast. Yeah, that just blew up. I mean, now, it's amazing.
Michael, it's not all about the numbers, but I do think that, you know, people need to appreciate the breadth and scope of what you're doing really on a worldwide basis. What are some of the numbers that... It attached to daily meditations and podcasts?
Yeah, so our daily meditations currently go out to about 400,000 people. That's the historically that's been the number one way people find out about us is through the daily meditations. Somebody, I don't know how many of your listeners might relate to this, but somebody forwards them this daily meditation from this guy Richard Rohr, and they get curious and go digging, and then they sign up for something, and then, you know, the adventure begins. It's either a daily meditation or it's one of his books, usually, is the entry point.
Yeah.
So that's been the engine, but increasingly we're finding, you know, that podcasts and social media are entry points, little mini entry points. You don't have to read a whole book. We've been experimenting even with, like, on Instagram. So it's this, you know, for folks who may not know, social media platform that's just pictures and little video clips that people scroll through. And a lot of people criticize Instagram because it's, you know, usually it's people trying to show off what a great life they have, right? It's very egoic place for the most part.
Yeah.
But the way that we do that is to try to interrupt that, you know, with little interludes of invitations to silence or short meditations. And so even when people are scrolling on Instagram, they might come across a CAC post and say, hey, that's something different. That speaks to me at a level that I'm not used to being spoken to in my day-to-day consciousness.
Yeah.
You know, and then, yeah, podcast. So, yeah, 4 million downloads of our podcast last year, and it's growing very rapidly. And, you know, the cool thing is that we have 30 years of recordings with Richard and some of the other greats of this tradition that we'll get to repurpose and produce and put out long into the future for our community to benefit from. So
those are some of the other ways. Sorry to interrupt you, but I thought you said 1 million. So 4 million downloads just last year of the podcast.
Yeah.
Is that what you said, Michael?
That's correct. Yeah, 4 million.
And then I've listened to Richard's podcast and James Finley. I didn't know Brian McLaren had one out, and Jackie Lewis, you're doing one with her, or soon to come, and then Barbara Holmes out, or soon to come. So really all... essentially, all the faculty members will also listen in on their podcast, it sounds like.
That's the idea, yeah.
That's excellent. Keep going. I interrupted you. Sorry about that. But daily meditations, online courses, podcast, Instagram?
Yeah, social media, yeah, generally. And then we have our event. So we're about to have our very last Conspire conference at the end of September of this year. I don't know when this recording will be released to your community, but there's still some spots available if folks want to join. It's a 3-day event with some of the very teachers I'm naming, and Mirabai Starr and Pat McCabe and some wonderful, wonderful gifted teachers. So it's the last Conspire in the 7 conference series covering Richard's 7 core themes, and we're going to do a lot to both role model and share with our community about where we see this body of work going, and really invite our community into that. You know, this isn't about people being dependent on CAC. This is about all of us taking up our posts and this broader vision that Richard has been pointing to, and asking ourselves, what is ours to do in this time? And you know, all we want to do is help people ask that question for themselves and give them some resources that inspires them along the way. That's really what we get to invite our community into at the Conspire conference. So it's the last Conspire, but I have no doubt that we will be continuing to do major conferences and so forth. I mean, these days, too, you can do it in person and you can invite folks to log in from all over the world as they do. To participate in the experiences. So that's a big part of what I'm sure we'll have in the future. And the Living School, long question. So we actually paused the Living School for a year. It's been going for, we just enrolled our 9th class, I believe. We called it an experiment, and it went for 9 years as an experiment. And now we're just asking some deeper questions about what can we really do with this idea of bringing people through not just a one-off experience or a written piece of content, but an in-depth 2-year formation that, you know, Cynthia says, it's not just about new knowledge, it's about a whole new operating system that we're trying to help people develop. And Keating, before he died, sent us messages to encourage us to keep that going. He said it's the only place that he knows of where lay people can get a real in-depth formation in the in the great contemplative traditions of Christianity anywhere in the world. And that's something that we don't take lightly, and that's a need that needs to be there in the landscape. But we want to be strategic about it too. Like, who is this really serving? How is it serving them? How do we make it not just something that benefits individuals on their path, but this idea of being a part of a broader movement that's bringing forward contemplative wisdom in this time, in this age? So lots more to come on that, but we're in that discernment process with our teachers and our staff and our community right now.
Yeah. Question and a comment. Question on Conspire. In live and participation via Zoom, but what type of numbers would you expect of participants there? Michael, any idea?
Yeah, so normally we have 2,000 or so in person and then another 2,000 or 3,000 online. Sadly, you know, we decided it was too risky when we had to make the decision, is it online or in person, back in January and February. And so this year it's going to be entirely online. And we're going to have 5,000 spots.
Wow.
And it's the number that we thought we can sustain. We can facilitate an intimate experience for folks through breakouts and through other ways of not just having it be, you know, a large scale, one directional content dissemination, but actually facilitate meaningful experience for folks. And that we could support them. You know, we have a what we call our community engagement team that's there to support directly our community, but, you know, much beyond 5,000, and those folks are going to be totally overwhelmed. So it's going to be big, but the way that it's being designed is that it's also going to be a very profound and intimate experience for folks who are able to participate.
Yeah, and then a comment, because you're too humble to mention this, but you mentioned Thomas Keating, and my memory is that before he passed, he invited Richard up himself, others from leading contemplative organizations, and then they brought kind of the next generation. And you were one of the folks that Richard tabbed and said, hey, let's, it's kind of a weekend or a get together, wasn't it? Or a week long get together at Snowmass. Or tell us a little bit more about that experience, if you will.
Yeah, I would love to. I actually helped organize it, but I wasn't one of the actual participants. We sent a number of folks, a couple staff members and a couple, one board member, Felina Hewart, who folks might know, and a couple of attendees from the Living School. And it was but I did get lots of good downloads from it. And it was Thomas Keating and Richard and Tilden Edwards from Shalem, and Lawrence from the World Community of Christian Meditation. And it was just this acknowledgement that, you know, the current generations of torchbearers of this contemplative renewal are nearing the end of their time on this mortal plane, so to speak.
Yeah.
And they had just conversations where they were honest with that, with the gathered community of kind of emerging leaders and practitioners, and wanting to have dialogue about what does that mean and what do we do with that. And I think it was a very powerful experience. I mean, I know Thomas himself, one of the experiences that the group that we sent up had, Thomas came, and this was shortly before he passed, and gave them an hour of reflection on the process of dying, which he referred to, I remember this because it was so moving to me, and kind of funny almost, with this big smile on his face. He said, I'm experiencing the diminishment of my finite self. That's how he referred to the dying process, you know. And he just had this big smile and this kind of giggle to him of like, oh, what a joy to have this opportunity to allow the divine to break into me through dying. So, you know, I don't want to be naive about the challenges ahead of us. You know, we're following in the footsteps of some giants, and I think God is going to always be at work in calling people forward, whether they're ready for it or not. That's the gospel story. That's the biblical narrative over and over and over again. To try to hold that post and offer a vision in this next generation. So we may not have Richard. We already Thomas is only accessible from the great cloud of saints and witnesses. You know, soon enough, that'll be true about Richard and our other teachers as well. And nobody can fill those shoes. You know, there's not going to be another Thomas Keating or Richard Rohr, but there's going to be you, Mike, and me, Michael, and each one of your listeners, and many others with profound gifts and an openness to being called and challenged by God to step to that for these times. So I think that's the message that our teachers were trying to convey. Not that it'll be without bumps and bruises and fears and anxieties, but our job here is to be faithful and not to be attached to that anxiety ourselves.
Yeah, and then in closing, kind of in that tradition of the front door and the gateway, I mean, the CAC, as I understand it now, has a staff of 40 and has, you know, a wide array of donors and is offering many services for free and are on scholarship. So I guess the point I'm trying to get to is the CAC is very much here and very much going to be around and very much has a big plan for a service into the future. Can you speak a little more maybe in closing to that point, Michael?
Yeah, absolutely. This has been what we're preparing for 7 years now, and the work will never be done, but I feel very confident for a few reasons. Very practically, this is where the future of spirituality and spiritual thought and practice is moving. I feel that all the way into my bones. Whatever role CAC has to play in it, it's happening, you know? But for us too, like Richard and the Franciscans have granted us the copyrights to every bit of Richard's teaching and work that he's ever had. The Franciscans said, we see you as one of the most powerful ministries for the gospel that's come out of our Franciscan community. And they want us to succeed. So, you know, Richard as in the flesh may not be with us in the same way at some point, but Richard's vision and teachings and inspiration will always be accessible to us and will always be a part of what I think CAC is putting out into the world. And we've seen the level of loyalty and commitment from our community that has inspired. We are so blessed to be stewarding this position, this mission that Richard helped us get started. And so that sense of gratitude that people feel for his impact in their life flows through CAC in service to this broader mission that Richard has always been about. We are so grateful to be in that position. I think we have a really deeply trusting relationship with our community that enables folks to be supporting it, you know, financially and so forth. We're doing some really good, at the end of the day, nuts and bolts kind of planning and preparing for various kinds of scenarios about how this could look for the next generation. So I'll just say that and the rest is kind of up to God. But I will say that I feel so grateful to have been able to do this work with Richard and with our community to kind of cast this vision for a way forward. And I feel that we're doing what we can and what's ours to do in service to that for this time.
Outstanding. Well, thank you, Michael, for all you do. I mean, it actually doesn't seem like all that long ago where I remember I was reading Richard Rohr and I thought, I'm surely the only person in Kansas City even reading this. And, you know, which touches to what Richard always said, you know, the spiritual journey can have a bit of loneliness to it. But you think of how well connected we all are now and how we can feel as kindred spirits. And you folks are on the front edge of so many of that, and it's kind of been the lightning rod for connecting so many of us. So thank you, and thanks to all at the CAC for all you do for us, and thank you for your time, Michael. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks so much, Mike. You too.